It is the Weird Things Podcast. As always, I am your host, Brian Brushwood, joined, as I always have been, by my inimitable co-host, Justin Robert Young. How are you, Justin?
It's Weird Things. It's definitely not Great Night. It's not World's Greatest Con. It's not all the other shows that we do together. This is a new show that we do together.
Yeah. Well,
not a new show. We've done this show for over 15 years,
I guess. But we're going to do what we always do.
We always do it.
Which is always keep to the serious science and the serious topics. We're not going to speculate wildly about what might be.
No nonsense.
That's always been our slogan on the Weird Things.
Weird Things, we got no nonsense. So if you're here for nonsense...
We've straight up run out.
Hit the bricks.
Okay. So first up in our no nonsense strategy.
Have you ever run point guard on any show that you've done?
What do you mean?
In this role, the role you're doing now.
Not since BB Live Show.
And even then, BB Live Show was just chaos.
Let's talk about humans talking to humpback whales. You hear about this conversation? Did you hear about these DMs that humans slided into?
Wait a minute. Whales don't speak English.
Well, according to this video, I dare you to defy me.
Yeah, let me hear it.
A recorded humpback signal. And 10 seconds later, Twain answered. The conversation from 2021 lasted a remarkable 20 minutes as the whale circled the boat. A new paper suggests it's the first such communicative exchange between humans and humpback whales in the humpback language.
It's a window into possibility.
Okay, so basically they do a spam call. It's like they're like, hello, humpback. and then the humpback is like, yes. And it's like, hello, humpback. they had a quote unquote conversation. The new news was.
Wait, hold on. Can I comment on this before we go any further into the news?
Please do.
I do this with my birds every day.
What do you mean?
Dr. Bird will, in a tonal like whistle, go, and then we go. Me and my wife go, hi, doctor. And then he goes, and then we go, hi, doctor. We go back and forth, wherein we make a similar sound. He makes a similar sound. This is not, at least to this point, been listed as the first conversation between human and birds. And if this counts, then what I do every single day counts with my bird.
Okay, so real thing that happens is every single morning when I get up, about 50% of the time, I'm up early enough that my Weimaraner Joy is able to, I'm up early enough that I can take her out and run her around on the property. She likes it very, very much. Bonnie was confused because Joy, as they, Weimaraners tend to be pretty smart. Bonnie was confused because Joy would look at me and begin to cough like, and she's like, I think there's something wrong with her throat. I think we need to go to the doctor. And I'm like, you do realize that's the exact sound she makes when I have her on a leash and she pulls too hard and she chokes herself. Like, I think she's straight up saying, let's do the thing
where you choke me.
Where I go, right? So in this case, the footage that we just listened to is from 2021, but new research documents seem to indicate, and there's a version of SETI that's like just trying to talk to intelligent creatures here on Earth, which, to be honest, I can't fault. I think that's not a bad idea, all things being equal.
To try to communicate more and more with people that are... with all of God's creatures?
Well, or at least to understand kind of the handshaking process between vastly different types of brains.
Yeah, if that's what we're doing here, right? Like, we have no idea what that sound means to the whale and what the whale is trying to communicate by repeating that sound back to the boat. Like, we are soliciting a theoretically mirrored response. And that is cool. It is certainly cool with a whale because, you know, you don't have a whole lot of interactions with whales. They sort of go and do what they please. So if they are around a boat or around humans, it is cool to see them doing whatever, up to and including literally just
attacking the boat.
Well, that's terrifying.
but also that's a thing that they're doing now is attacking boats.
I mean, I guess I don't know the scientific significance, and I will go so far as in my role as the commentariat to say that it is a useless significance of just getting a whale to repeat a thing back.
Well, and it sounds like it was not exactly repeating the thing back. It sounds like it was saying a response to it. So it's like it's equivalent to ring, ring. Hello. And it's like, hi, may I speak to Brian? Yes, this is Brian, or whatever. It's to be honest, what it made me think of is the work that our friend Andrew Bain is doing with large language models. Like if mm-hmm. we record enough conversations between various whales, might we be able to essentially create a whale AI is the question I wanted to play with.
Maybe. I guess the biggest connection point would be trying to understand what the whale mind thinks, right? I guess, like, in my mind, I don't know what the difference between doing this kind of idea with a whale or with dogs. Like, you know.
Well, that's a legitimate debate. So, different mammalian brains, as I understand it, this is something that they covered in my pseudoscience class 25 years ago. Different mammalian brains have different structures. Humans, we have our language area is a little place called Broca's area. And in other animals, they simply have not developed one of those. And so as a result, in the 1960s, there was an attempt to teach sign language to a chimpanzee that was playfully named Nim Chimpsky after Noam Chomsky for his work with this is before he became, you know,
known for political stuff.
Yeah, correct. But the counter argument was, either they have the developed area of the brain that would allow them to process language, or they don't.
Yeah.
If they don't, then essentially what you're doing, and this is probably an unfair straw man argument, it's the equivalent of going to an island with a bunch of flightless birds and then standing in front of them and just flapping your arms. And then suddenly they're all like, oh, so that's how you do it. And then they all start flying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So what is unknown is whether or not there's a linguistics part of a whale brain and whether or not this is just habit and routine, you know, like just reflexive, or if there is some kind of substantive conversation.
Yeah. My bet's no. Although I don't know, there is like a lot of conversation about like whales making sounds to each other, right?
Well, and passing along messages in the form of songs get created, and they get much like humans play telephone. Like that's how a whale song can be heard in off the coast of Antarctica.
Yeah,
and then, you know, months later, they're hearing other whales in their social network repeating the same memes, essentially. Now, whether or not there's context to be understood,
that means anything, or they're just like
correct.
Oh, they're good. They're good mimics. Like they like mimicking each other. That is a social behavior,
right?
But it doesn't really mean. It's not like it's like 10% off at Walmart. That's like the point of the whale song. It could just be like, and somebody listens to that and goes, that's
a jam. Well, and likewise, we've made games with our pups of trying to induce howling for them. And, you know, every dog is different, but we figured out that with Pippi, our Australian Shepherd, the trick is an actual chord on the piano, another chord, and then she's kind of into it, and then another chord, and then screw up a chord, at which point, you know, that discordant rang causes her to just involuntarily go.
Yeah.
So it could be something like that. But as far as, I mean, I could think of worse ways if what you wanted to do is study different modalities of conversation for extraterrestrial creatures. It's like, well, we got some proxies here. Yeah. You know, might as well start there.
Yeah.
Or you could just jerk off a dolphin.
Brian, we're not doing silly stuff.
No. I'm actually quoting from the 1960s study. Never mind.
You know what you're doing.
I'm just saying.
Don't. You're smiling.
I'm just.
You know what you're doing.
Okay. All right.
But well, while we're here, I think maybe the people involved in this research might want to go do a little stand-up comedy. At which point, I think it might sound a little something like this.
Oh, my God.
White whales be like...
It's funny because it's... All right, that's about as far as a field as we can go.
We're pulling it back. Too silly.
Too silly. Can we do an AI minute corner hour?
AI minute corner hour. As a large language model, we cannot process your request.
So I think something that we should do is keep on sharing surprises to ourselves as we continue to try to use AI for different things.
Yes.
You had mentioned that you use ChatGPT to write the tedious podcast notes for stuff. We're like, hey, this data set, that was our podcast. Please make notes. Now it
is even easier. And after things a few weeks ago, I sang the song, the glorious song of Riverside, which is another like StreamYard and a few others.
For the uninitiated who aren't doing podcasts, Riverside is basically
like
kind of like Zoom, but everybody records locally. Then you get independent tracks and then it blends them.
It goes through your Chrome browser, which allows local recording. So you never have to worry about somebody else recording the right way. Like you will know whether or not their recording is happening locally. And you also get video. What they have added is not only the ability to make a transcript of the video that you just made, but also show notes, and will break out little clips. So
it'll do show notes, not with what the plan was, but with what the actual context of the actual conversation was.
Yes.
This is one of those things, Justin, because for anybody who... hasn't heard, you know, I'm sort of going through this like 2-month boot camp of trying to understand, you know, we have 7 different verticals that we do out of this property.
Yeah.
4 or 5 podcasts, 2 YouTube channels and so on. I'm trying to understand everything to figure out like what the better solution would be, but the better solution just keeps getting better by the week. And so it's hard for me to want to implement any one solution to fix everything because everything just keeps getting better so fast.
Yeah. I do think that part of the moment that we're at right now though, is that those solutions are so cheap that you might as well just do stuff. I think like we're probably at a point now beyond AI where, you know, during the holiday season, it might be worth it to go check out. Like we figured out, our friend Darren Kitchen was building a studio, so he bought a bunch of new stuff. And then he gave me old stuff that he was playing around with that essentially like takes away the necessity for like 2 of your 3 computers that you are currently using to broadcast. It can do those computers are there. essentially to provide the horsepower for video capture cards. Right. Like, and they also do other stuff. They can do a lot more. You can play higher end video games on it, but the reason why you had to get the computer the way that you did was just for the capture cards. And those things, now there's just a brick that you can just plug everything in. You don't have to worry about the capture cards. They're their own pain in the ass. All in the past, right? And, well, and similarly, and software does that as well. In a lot of times, either extraordinarily cheap, like I think like my Riverside plan is like $15 a month or something like that, or free in a lot of ways.
Well, and on top of that, there are solutions that we have engaged with in order to eliminate echo, to eliminate ducking, other things to eliminate... I don't know, just workflow. Like I think of all seven things I'm doing, they all have independent distribution methods. And, that's what I'm trying to work on. Welcome to Brian's Workflow Corner Hour. There's a lot to figure out. And I think that a lot's going to change in the next 2 weeks.
Well, sure. And just to focus on the AI stuff, that has been a material, like the AI solutions of Riverside alone, which is what they're doing is when they process the video, they are running the video through, I don't know if it's a Whisper or, you know, another service that does transcriptions, but they are they're auto doing transcriptions. That is something that I think is just going to be standard on almost every platform that does anything like this going forward. It would not shock me if, you know, with YouTube, there is a thing that you have as you're publishing, that's like, would you like to upload like a simple text file that would do subtitles? I would make a guess that that's probably going to go the way of the floppy disk over the next maybe even 2 years. Like, I think it's going to be very, very quick. That option will still be there is my guess, but it'll be buried under advanced settings for people who absolutely want to fine tune stuff. But everything else I think is just going to be auto-generated, because a lot of that stuff is really, really cheap. And then what Riverside is doing is then taking that transcript and saying to the AI, pick out the five most interesting 1 minute long clips from the transcript.
Right.
And then using those context clues of exciting words or people going back and forth,
or even like looking at the reactions that people have.
Not even looking. I believe that they are doing, it's all text.
What,
and so, then they are spitting it back to the video editor and saying, okay, now that we know the transcript that these words happened at this time, boop, cut out that thing. And it'll also give you a little name of what each clip is, so you know it. So for example, we're not wrong. I found out also that Riverside only allows 2 hour long videos, which was a reason why I didn't get the social clips up for We're Not Wrong until now. But today it cut out like nine of them. It was just nine little minute clips, and most of them were like really good. You can fine tune them a little bit, you know, to make them exactly how you want it. But that's stuff that I didn't have time for.
Yep.
Like I'm a one-man band.
Not a case where it's like somebody would have had that job. It's like, it just wouldn't have gotten done, but now it gets done.
If the ice cream man, social media clip guy was driving through my neighborhood and saying, for a very reasonable price, in fact, you name it, I'll do exactly this, then I would have done it. But there's no way I would have looked for it. I wouldn't have known what to look for, and I wouldn't know how to motivate that employee. It needed to happen automatically in the way that I needed spell check, like in the way that there is just a lot of creature comforts that we have built careers on via the internet, like Google Docs or Sheets or anything like that, that it's just, I would not have thought to do it. I just would have focused on my energy on other stuff that I can do better at. But now, transcript, show notes, the fact that I can just list for people like, just the whole, almost minute by minute, the topics that we're talking about. Boom, right there. People can find it.
Well, it's frictionless is what you're seeming to tickle around. It's like now it's frictionless because all you want to do is have a message that gets heard by the world, right? And now there's, you know, an unimaginable amount of tedium between you and there. And now all of a sudden there's a very friendly helper who's like, I don't mind doing all of it.
That's the thing that, you know, in talking to a lot of people about AI, the stuff that is the most resonant to me as a creator is not to think of it as a thing that is replacing anything. It's not.
Right.
And maybe it replaces certain elements of things in the future, but it ain't now. And I don't know when that's going to be. I'm going to live in the now for now. And if I'm living in the now, what AI is, are a lot of not too bright, but very fast interns.
Right. Well, as I'm fond of pitching, it's like most people ain't never had a writer's room before. Here's how it feels to be the smartest person in a writer's room. You walk in and you say, give me a bunch of ideas. And you're like, dumb, 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 dumb. That one's not bad. Okay, maybe something there. Dumb, dumb. Actually, that one's quite good. And most people are not accustomed to that or don't have the types of jobs to do that.
No. I totally agree with you. I think that you just have to, it ultimately gets to the point where, like, if you're creating something, you just need to know and think more about what you want to do and less about how you execute it beyond the things that are most important. Right. So for me to do a good podcast on politics, I need to read a lot about politics. I need to have a natural interest in it. I need to have good takes. That's the hardest thing, is a take that is not been said a billion times, that is interesting, that you can put good words to. I got to measure my voice so I am interesting and exciting to people as they are listening to me. None of that is social media. None of that is show notes. None of that is any of the things that a place with a staff kind of can do. The more that can be done outside of trusting another human to do it, and which is tedium, like, boy, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, just redo everything now, or wait one more month when it'll be even easier?
Well, give me an example of a thing that you were looking at that you're seeing a solution for that you're like, I don't know if I want to do this.
Like 2 months ago, I was theorizing about the possibility of taking all of my content, having it translated into all other languages, and being able to manipulate the lips so that it looked good enough that it would pass muster. In that just 2 months, not only is that now a product that is available off the shelf, but on top of that, it will also pick out the best 1 minute clips and write them, and, you know, so they can be posted or whatever. However, on the flip side, I am convinced that nobody is ever happier when they eventually figure out that the thing they watched was made entirely by a robot. They want there to be a human on the other side of it, even if that human is just sort of waving his hands and directing something.
That's interesting, because I would wonder, to me, the technical excitement of making the lips move appropriately, which, by the way, was one of the dreams of George Lucas, that he's like, I could just not have the actors like say I can think of a new line in post and then I could just change it. Like Queen Amidala, instead of saying I Annie, you need to come to Tatooine, like, right. I could say,
yeah, like, maybe if I could go back in the past, or maybe Han Solo would be all like, you seem upset, Greedo, would you like a hug?
So now, I mean, I think that is exciting, but for the same reasons why that kind of became a joke about George Lucas being too obsessed with tech and not obsessed with humanity, or at least the human connection to his art. I would wonder whether or not moving the lips is like pretending that this is actually in native Portuguese is a bridge too far, because that would scream digital manipulation. If an old clip of Scam School that was very obviously shot in San Francisco and nobody in Iceland has seen a bar that looks exactly like that, and yet you are speaking in perfect Icelandic and your lips are moving the right way, that might be discordant in a way that just making sure that accurate subtitles, that feels like a human's solution. Although maybe that changes going down the road and we're like, no, we actually want full on dubs that look like I want the funniest Spanish show ever to be in perfect English, and I want the lips to move exactly like they were speaking English.
The closest thing I could think of now is like when it comes to large science fiction novels, like let's say the Three Body Problem, like it's not just a matter of reading somebody else's words. It's like you care who the translator was. And I guess that's true for ancient Greek. It's like, oh, no, you got to read T.S. Lawrence or T.S. Eliot, or I don't know which one, version of the Iliad or the Odyssey or what have you.
Yeah.
T.S. Lawrence?
I don't know, man. What if I look like some kind of ancient Greek?
Some kind of prophecy or something? I'll tell you the one prophecy I care about.
Patreon.com/weirdthings, my friend. Yeah. And so it is Christmas. So go to your computer, go to patreon.com/weirdthings and give us your credit card. If you do that, you'll be happy.
Happy.
If you don't, you'll be in despair. You'll get after things early.
Early.
And you'll have
grow more hair.
And you'll get more hair.
And so this is Christmas. Thank you to all of our patrons.
Thank you.
It's because of you that we talk about whales answering spam phone calls.
I resent this in the chat. Subscribe to Sober Great Night by going to patreon.com/weirdthing.
I mean,
it ain't untrue.
Well, and also like Sober Great Night is just the Bones podcast on the Thursday morning. I don't know. It doesn't stay sober for long.
Do we have another story? You want to keep talking about AI?
We could keep on talking about AI unless somebody else has something else. Those were the two that I had prepped.
Yeah. What?
We could brag on Andrew Main.
Oh yeah. Quoted. Everybody go to read the following story. Discover Magazine. You ever heard of this Discover Magazine?
Go on.
Stefan Orns, The Year of the AI Conversation. Just go ahead and take a look. 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs in. Quote, "We really underestimated the impact it would have," says Andrew Main, who helped test ChatGPT and develop applications at OpenAI. For comparison, that user milestone, and talking about how fast OpenAI like crushed the new user milestone. And then, I don't know, it always annoys me when like they what they throw right under there is like, oh, well, Threads got to 100 million users in 5 days. It's like, no,
how are they doing today?
Well, beyond that, Threads didn't. Instagram did. Instagram said, would you like another part of Instagram? And
yeah.
A lot of people said, yes, I'd like a new feature on Instagram. And that's what happened. They did not have to acquire new users. They did not have to have people go through the sign up form. Like, that should be a different record.
So what are some of the ways that you surprise yourself with using
daily uses?
Yeah.
Daily uses. I made a specialized GPT that named itself Summarize Pro.
Okay.
That essentially just is the prefix that I was typing into ChatGPT.
And then at one point you just got to make that just automatically.
So now I just go to this window, I throw in a gigantic story that I've just read, and I ask him to summarize it in two paragraphs with bullet points, factoid bullet points below it. And so that is indispensable for doing prep on PX3, on We're Not Wrong. I've used a lot of DALL-E stuff, especially, you know, I just set up YouTube channels for PX3 and We're Not Wrong. And, you know, stuff like that used to really freak me out. Banner art, you know, background stuff, logos. It's just not a problem anymore. Like I, you know, for the banner art, when you're starting a YouTube channel, it's like, okay, well, what do I do? Just do a blank screen? Do I go into Photoshop and pretend that I use Photoshop?
Or do I hire a photographer and look smart in this suit?
But even then it's like, all right, well, I'm bumping back this web form, finishing this web form by however long I want to spend working on this problem. For both of them, I was just like, with We're Not Wrong, I was like, I put the logo in. I said, I need a YouTube background image at this exact specification that utilizes geometric shapes, is monochromatic. Boom. Like it popped one out. I said, man, less like this, more like this. Do-do-do-do. Same thing. PX3. I took a picture of me and I said, please create an image that is a background, a YouTube background image at these specifications that is about American politics. Boop, 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 boop. Done. Like the quickness that I'm able to get through things that used to bring me anxiety. That's the biggest thing for me, is that it is an eliminator of professional anxiety on a
paralysis.
Oh my God. Yes.
Like just go. God.
Like I've wanted to do a dog and pony show logo forever. For as long as I've had the production company, I've had the same idea for a circle and then kind of like a logo where there's a dog looking one way and a pony looking the other way. But it looks not silly. It looks a little professional. Like you wouldn't mind wearing it on like a t-shirt or something like that. And then one day I was like, oh, I can just do that in DALL-E. And I just, more like this. They always made the pony too cute. I'm like, no, make the pony mad. make it an angry pony. Like, but yeah, that's like, what I don't think people are prepared for is that AI next year, AI is going to be in everything. And you're not going to know just why you're better at everything and why everything is more fun and easy. And it's going to be because of AI. And the stories that we're going to talk about are not going to be about AI in the same way that we don't talk about web storage.
Right.
Like, it's like, no one's like, oh my God, web storage got a lot cheaper. We just know, oh, YouTube lets me upload 4K.
Right.
You know, we don't, but all these things, these baseline elements of it. What's exciting about AI is that AI is like this baseline behind the scenes thing, but it's also this incredible tool that you can play around with and make things yourself with. I genuinely believe, in the same way that like when Instagram first took off, everybody was like in love with it and it was number one on the app store, blah, blah, blah. Nobody was like, the internet wins again. It was just, wow, cool. Instagram. There's this site. It's all about pictures because mobile pictures are an exciting thing.
Takes your pictures and make them look crappier. Like they were taken 20 years ago.
Sure. But that's cool.
Yeah.
Right. And now it's its own way of communicating. It has changed social interaction, especially for a certain demographic. That's, I think, where we're going to get really fast with AI.
Like, well, I, where I'm feeling it right now is I don't so much feel There are some people who have never messed with OpenAI or Bing or one of the advanced chat bots or whatever. And it is fun to do the party tricks and to watch their minds kind of click.
You've got a routine at this point.
I do.
What is your routine?
Spill your beans. Okay. All right. My routine is, I'd say, hey, I'm here in a Japanese bar. I'm in Tokyo, Japan. It's me and Justin, and I just want an American style lager. Can you just talk Japanese and have place my order for me? Also, you know who I am, so just kind of explain who I am. And so I hear a bunch
talk in Japanese,
but I hear things like a Brian Brushwood, American magician, you know, and then American style lager, you know, Justin Robert Young, and I'm like, whoa, just now somebody came in. It's a Norwegian dude. He's like really tall. And he said something in Norwegian. I don't speak Norwegian, but it sounded like unskyld, jeg forstår ikke, kunne sådanne til. And it suddenly immediately says, oh, it sounds like he says he doesn't understand. Could you say that again? And I was like, thanks. And then the third phase is, oh my God, the bartender just overheard this. And now he wants to take me out in the back for a karaoke secret bar. And so we go back there. And then it's like, oh my God, write a movie scene about this whole thing that happened. And so I was like, make it like a summer blockbuster. And then it does it. And I was like, end it with a rap. And then
it always ends with a rap.
Yeah. And then, after that, it's like, I don't know.
Brian is delighted by ChatGPT rapping. Like the mom in Arrested Development was delighted by Gene Parmesan.
Yes.
Like you just, as soon as ChatGPT starts busting verses, you're like,
That all of that is true. But what I was wanting to bring up is the novelty of ChatGPT and I assume Bard, I haven't used it very much, being good is waning. And instead, what I'm feeling more is like, why are you so stupid, Siri? Why are you so stupid, Alexa? You know what I want.
Yeah.
You know, Alexa is like, you know, hey, play that song. And it's now like
playing the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, would you like to buy some toilet paper? I'm like, no, I'd like you to play that song. It's like, well, I don't have it, so I don't know how to do it. It's like, you know, I have Spotify. You go to Spotify, you find that song and you play it. And it's like, oh, did you mean the live version? I was like, you're messing with me. Messing with me.
It is weird what our expectations are for stuff like that. That I've certainly had the same frustration because you look at Siri and Alexa now and they feel like command line DOS prompts that it's like, okay, congratulations to me. About as fast, like it's a 50-50 shot whether or not I could do it faster on my phone.
Right.
Then say it. Because if I get it wrong once or it gets it wrong once, then I might as well have done it on my phone.
Well, especially when you're like in a party situation and it's like you have the exact right clip to play or whatever. And you just want to like, DJ, hit it. And the DJ is like, I'm sorry, I don't understand. It was like, you screwed it up, DJ. What are you doing?
Siri does a thing in CarPlay where I'm usually listening to podcasts and then I'll have a thing for a song. I'll just want to like, it's like, oh, but play Dear Mama by Tupac. But because the way that CarPlay works or Siri works in CarPlay, it is asking me, or it automatically defaults to searching in the audio app that is playing audio now. So it will find
a podcast
that involves the words Dear Mama and Tupac. And they're always random, like crazy nonsense. And then you have to say, no, on Apple Music, play Dear Mama by Tupac. And then it's smart, but there's no in between. There's no like, that seems like a weird thing to ask for a podcast. Are you sure you don't mean Dear Mama, the song by Tupac that's on a audio, on a music service? Like, that's what I feel I could do if the large language model stuff was attached to it. The question is whether or not 2024 brings that to us. I got to imagine.
I have to think it will. Like, I think that the new game is going to be At this point, we've hit, I don't even want to say minimum viable product because it's truly extraordinary, but I think we're increasingly going to value just the speed of responses. You know, like right now, there's a lot of good tricks that are used to cover up the fact that compute time is happening. Whoever moves the fastest to be all like, oh shit. Oh, so sorry. I'm cursing. Well, whatever. Oh shoot. Sounds like somebody wants to go back and hear the Humpty dance. I'm like, that's right. You know, and make it more conversational. I think that is going to develop a lot over the next 1 year.
Yeah. I think that the technical questions with a lot of that is all based into the computing. You know, there's a report that just came out as we were recording now, which is a review of Google's Gemini. That's like, hey, Google's Gemini is good. It's just really slow. And that's their pro. It's not their ultra. So it's like pro is probably around ChatGPT 3.5-ish. Their ultra with the benchmarks that they released, they claim to that it's around GPT 4-ish. We don't know. It's not out. You know, at this point, it's still their girlfriend from Canada. But like, I wonder when you are creating these kinds of models, speed is huge, especially when you're dealing with language stuff like we are now, we're talking about. And if you want to make it conversational, then the timing, tone, and tenor of a conversation like that, especially if you want it to feel more Jarvis-y, that's really important.
There's a, are you finding yourself trusting ChatGPT more these days?
I
like for factual stuff.
Yeah, I tend to, it has earned my trust in that the stuff that I'm asking it, I usually wind up double checking anyway, and it's been right enough of the times that like, I think the biggest hallucination bummers came pre Bing search, ubiquitous Bing search, because that's where like,
and I'll ask, I'll ask, hey, are you hallucinating right now? And he'll say like, yeah, I am. Sorry. I've just been making this up.
There was with season 3 of World's Greatest Con, Andrew Main, our co-host on this show, graciously sponsored the show, sponsored that season. And so we did these ads, we had to do these live reads. And at the time I thought that ChatGPT was using, it was like the very beginning of them using Bing. And so I thought by throwing in the URL to Andrew's book that we were doing the live read for, just saying, hey, here's this book. Give me a 30-second radio a 30-second radio ad for this book. It did not search it. It did not know what happened in the book. It just knew from the way that Amazon does its URLs, the names of it was Girl in the Water, a Sloane McPherson novel. It knew enough context that it just spit out this thing that like had that twists that turns
that you had me read, yep. And then you processed and we sent for approval, and the author Andrew Main was like,
none of that happens in the book.
Sounds like an interesting book though.
But now it's if anything, I agree with some of the criticism that ChatGPT has been, I don't want to say nerfed, because I think that that's probably an oversimplistic way to look at it, but it requires clearer prompting now, yeah. Because it unfortunately it knows that it's the 800-pound gorilla, or OpenAI knows they're the 800-pound gorilla, and so they do not want certain things to happen. They are taking stuff seriously. They're taking safety seriously. And so you can still do a lot of cool stuff. Obviously there's always going to be edgelords that are going to want it to make napalm and stuff like that. But you just need to be able to prompt a little bit better. And that's really my current status on it, is that you know, I've twice had lab work that I've just uploaded the PDF to ChatGPT and I've asked, hey, explain this for me. Like, explain this in plain English, blah, blah, blah. And this last time it was a little bit like, hey, I'm not your doctor. Just so you know, I'm not your doctor. You should go see a doctor. And I'm like, I literally got this from my doctor. I'm going to see my doctor again. I literally just want a plain English context. So when I talk to my doctor, I can have a better, more informed conversation. And eventually it got there.
Yeah, I have noticed that it really helps to begin with the called shot of like, we're going to have a back and forth of this many rounds. Eventually, I'm going to want a recommendation for blank. But first, do some research. What's that?
How's your day?
But first, do some research and prove to me that you understand the fundamentals of blank.
Yes.
It's like, great. Okay, good. You do. What I want to do is explain blank in this kind of thing. What are some ways to do that? You know?
Yeah.
But then you do have to go check work, like just like a middle school teacher.
Well, I think for important stuff. Yeah. You know, I think when
are YouTube videos important?
Yeah. I mean, like if you're doing information for like a Modern Rogue video or something like that, then yes, you need to make sure that it's right. But also, if you get it wrong, then you can do another video. The We Got It Wrong video.
Yep.
I guess. No, you can just run the comment section because I'm sure they'll be very quiet.
I'm sure they're all going to be correct. Hey, let's talk picks.
Pick. You go first.
I watched the Amanda Knox documentary on Netflix, and I only did so because she did like a two-hour interview with Sam Harris on the Making Sense podcast, and that's a tale that to hear it today sounds very, very simple, but at the time was not very simple at all. But now it just quite simply is. Once you learn, like, I don't know, maybe five facts, nothing about her reactions seems mysterious anymore.
I have long said that America's superpower is its self-loathing complex. America likes to point out America's flaws. Boy, do we love it. Sometimes you need to understand that we should take that stuff seriously and not literally. And by that, I mean, go to other countries and just kind of see how things work, because there's some really cool things that we can absolutely learn. And America's really, really good at assimilating various different ideas from around the world. But boy, it ain't all super efficient everywhere. And Italy's justice system, at least in this case, did not do well by her.
Yeah. So for those who were too young to know, Amanda Knox was accused of a bizarre sex cult assassination of her roommate after only 3 weeks of being her roommate. She's a attractive 20-year-old American. There was intrigue that involved, you know, her boyfriend in Italy at the time. Things that didn't come out until much, much later. She had only been dating this guy for 5 whole days. It was the beginning of a 20-year-old's fling on a trip to Italy. Here's another thing.
She was trying to eat, pray, love.
She was 3 weeks into being roommates. So if she didn't react a whole lot, it's probably because she's like, number one, did not have a strong emotional attachment to this new roommate of 3 whole weeks that she barely knew. Number two, tried to speak only in Italian And turns out, like, literally, until she was arrested, didn't know that this woman had been raped and murdered.
Yeah, and for those of you who did not follow it, a lot of the reasons why she was looked at as guilty, not only by the investigators who very, you know, increasingly kept doubling down on the fact that they were not, they did not have the goods. They made a mistake and then kept trying to cover up that mistake with more mistakes. But also a lot of the evidence, quote unquote, was her lack of a reaction.
Correct.
Which, like, not her saying I did it, not any physical evidence. In fact, the physical evidence, as you were describing to me in this documentary, was insanely sloppy.
Well, and that's another bit of the optics, is because, like, here in America, we're only getting everything third hand and so on. So a news agency in Italy shows what looks to be forensic people in forensic suits doing forensic things. And it's like, well, clearly if they found DNA on the knife, that must be it. Little detail that comes out in the documentary, they never once changed gloves and they just touched everything. So all DNA got everywhere. Yeah. Everything is compromised.
And this written in an American courtroom, thrown out immediately. Yep. All the evidence thrown out immediately.
On top of that, there's
weirdly, that probably would have been bad for Amanda Knox in that case, as she did not murder anybody. It successfully collected DNA evidence would have been a boon to her.
Yeah. Well, the you're right. On top of that, the disparagement laws are different. So it's like, you know, she's barely speaking Italian and she's pressured into just, you know, hey, you're the best witness. You have to say your boyfriend did it. And she's like, oh, okie dokie. Here in America, that would be a civil suit of defamation, but it's a criminal issue. And I believe that all these years later, she says that for the third time, they're reopening the case and she's going to be tried in absentia yet again for defamation for the pressured claim that she made in that moment.
So wait, who is the defendant?
The defendant would be the boyfriend of 5 days.
Who was eventually found to be the murderer.
Neither of them had anything to do with it. It was a third guy, a miscreant, who had a criminal record before.
Okay.
Who did 16 years, was found guilty, and then the moment he got out, went out and started assaulting women again.
Yeah.
So it's like, ain't much of a mystery here on this one.
When the moon hit his eye like a big pizza pie, that's a murder.
Yes. But if you don't want to watch the documentary, at least listen to the interview on the Sam Harris podcast, Making Sense, because she talks about what it's like. Like, she feels awful for, you know, her 5-day boyfriend, because he basically is living. He's O.J. Simpson over there in Italy. Just everyone assumes
that he's the bad guy.
That there's too much smoke. There had to be fire.
Mm. And she got the hell out of Dodge.
Responsibly so.
She's like, see you later, pasta munchers.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Pasta munchers. What about you? What do you got?
I don't watch a lot of reality television, but for whatever reason, my wife and I started watching the Squid Game Challenge.
Oh my God. I am adverse to even giving it a try, but if you're telling me that this is a recommendation.
By way of what was reported at the time, actual starvation and real injuries, they seem to have made a pretty compelling show. I'm at a point. Like, the first two or three episodes are really good. Like they are really well paced. They got genuinely interesting people to be in the middle of this, and they the challenges are interesting. Exciting people get eliminated. Blah 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 blah. I'm at a point now, about halfway through, where things are like starting to hit a bit of a momentum wall. I don't know how many episodes are in this show, but it's a compelling reality format. Granted, it was a television show based around a reality game.
Right.
So, you know, the show was good. They follow the show, you know, pretty religiously. You know, you just mix in a little bit of that Survivor metagaming of people believing like, okay, well, I got to make alliances here and here and we got to stick together. And
This is totally an American production or?
No, this was shot in England. And so a lot of the most interesting people all either have Northern England accents or are from the American South. But I kind of feel like they prioritized different accents in the casting of this.
Oh, that's interesting, because if you have the event, you really could get people from all over the world and you really could just have different editing teams just be told, this one's going to America, this one's going to England, this one's going to South Korea, go for it.
Yeah, I don't know. I would assume that they probably want to replicate it and do stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. The first few episodes I found compelling. They are good at ending on cliffhangers. And, you know, like, it's so interesting to see a show like that that is inextricably based on broadcast television pacing. You know, the reason why The Bachelor or Survivor, like these very mega, even today, mega successful reality shows are what they are, is because unlike television, that used to be based on like Knight Rider was going to be going over a cliff every 15 minutes because that's where the commercials were, right? Like something interesting had to happen at a certain interval. Reality television is pretty much the only thing that rigidly sticks to that. In the same kind of way, like even big broadcast dramas, like, you know, I don't know, Ghosts or whatever, the shows that I only know because they advertise during football. Like, I don't think that they have the same 80s style, like someone's hair gets lit on fire every 15 minutes sort of pacing, but reality television shows do. You are always, you can't go to a commercial with anything that's anything less than like, what? Record scratch.
Right.
Broken glass sound.
Orchestra hits. Bom, bom, bom.
Exactly. And this is a little bit of that, that you do get the like, do, but there's no commercials because it's Netflix.
do. Take a breath. Okay, let's keep going. Here we go.
Well, because like they do have a lot of fake outs, and that's part of the charm of the show, because you do get the meta story is these people are going crazy because they're in a sensory deprivation zone.
Yeah.
Like they are just in this gigantic open dorm space. They are meeting each other for the first time. Some of them are really, really playing the game hard. Some of them are keeping stuff close to the vest. You keep cutting back to their entrance interviews where you get more about their backstory and how they're not here to make friends and blah, 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 blah. And that, you know, goes against, you know, what they might be saying in the moment. But part of the charm is that it is raising your blood pressure sometimes for nothing. So you can also feel like them, like, oh, this is an unsettling environment. This kind of sucks. You have no idea when you're going to get eliminated and why you might get eliminated, as the biggest change in the show compared to, well, I guess the biggest change between the show and the reality show is they don't kill
Lack
you.
Of murders. Yeah.
Although, especially at the beginning, and I don't know whether or not they changed this, but in the first few episodes, they're all mic'd, having those like collar mics,
yeah,
right? So they don't have anything pinned to them and they can just kind of go, you know, free range. But they also had little squibs inside their shirts. So when they were in the red light, green light thing, if they were moving, they had their white shirt and then it would just be like, and then it would just start bleeding. It was black. It wasn't red. So yeah. It didn't look too grotesque. But now a few episodes in, I think that they've done away with the
murder aspect.
Yeah. People are just eliminated. Although they are good about like, once you're eliminated, that's like, they don't do exit interviews. They don't like, you are kind
right, of because
gone.
You're dead.
Essentially.
Yeah.
They hold on to that. Gameplay wise, the biggest thing that they've changed is they have a lot of these basically mini challenges or tests of honesty. So one, they just wheeled a phone into the center of the room, didn't explain anything. The phone rings, guy picks it up, he's like, congratulations, you've earned a prize. And they brought burger and fries for this guy, and he gets to hand it out to everybody. They all start messing around again. A couple hours later, phone rings again. Same guy runs up, picks it up, and it's like, you will be eliminated unless you, in 2 minutes, can get somebody else to pick up the phone and talk to the operator. You have 2 minutes.
Ooh, so that's now, pretty good.
Yeah. He was a bad liar. He got eliminated. Spoiler alert for episode 3. But so that's cool. I don't know. I think it's good. As far as psychological, I mean, again, I think it partly came together because they were legitimately starving these people. But you know where that torture went when you see it on screen.
That was certainly the case with the Biggest Loser. The stories that have come out of that production were pretty horrific.
That was a weird one.
Yeah.
We have friends that worked on that.
Then I'll speak no more of it.
Yeah. But yeah, look, at the end of the day, you're going to have to lose a lot of weight in a time period that it might not be super healthy for you to lose that amount of weight that fast.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll be back next week with another episode. Andrew Main.
Yeah, hopefully.
Since it's just the two of us, I think we'll skip the after things. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see you guys next week. Until then. What's the catchphrase that we always say?
Oh, take a shot.
Take a shot.
It's been weird.